Who was it that saved my life? Somebody grabbed me as I fell and fired at the thugs. Did he? Straight at their faces, blew their heads off. That was that new furnace foreman of ours, been here 2 months. Best man I've ever had. He's the one who got wise to what the gravy boys were planning and warned me this afternoon. Told me to arm our men, as many as we could. We got no help from the police or the state troopers. They dodged all over the place with the fanciest delays and excuses I ever heard of. It was all fixed in advance. The goons weren't expecting any armed resistance. It was that furnace foreman, Frank Adams is his name, who organized our defense, ran the whole battle, and stood on a roof picking off the scum that came too close to the gate. Boy, what a marksman. I shudder to think how many of our lives he saved tonight. Those bastards were out for blood, Mr. Reardon.
I'd like to see him.
He's waiting somewhere outside. It's he who brought you here, and he has permission to speak to you when possible.
Send him in. Then go back out there, take charge. Finish the job.
Is there anything else I can do for you, Mr. Reardon?
No, nothing else.
He lay still, alone in the silence of his office. He knew that the meaning of his mills had ceased to exist, and the fullness of the knowledge left no room for the pain of regretting an illusion. He had seen in a final image the soul and essence of his enemies, the mindless face of the thug with the club. It was not the face itself that made him draw back in horror, but the professors, the philosophers, the moralists, the mystics, who had released that face upon the world. He felt a peculiar cleanliness. It was made of pride and of love for this earth which was his, not theirs. It was the feeling which had moved him through his life, the feeling which some among men know in their youth, then betray, but which he had never betrayed, and it carried within him as a battered, attacked, unidentified, but living motor, the feeling which he could now experience in its full, uncontested purity, the sense of his own superlative value, and the superlative value of his life. It was the final certainty that his life was his, to be lived with no bondage to evil, and that that bondage had never been necessary. It was the radiant serenity of knowing that he was free of fear, of pain, of guilt. If it's true, he thought, that there are avengers who are working for the deliverance of men like me, let them see me now. Let them tell me their secret. Let them claim me. Let them...
Come in,
he said aloud in answer to the knock on his door. The door opened, and he lay still. The man standing on the threshold with disheveled hair, a soot-streaked face and furnace-smudged arms, dressed in scorched overalls and blood-stained shirt, standing as if he wore a cape waving behind him in the wind, was Francisco D'Anconia. It seemed to Reardon that his consciousness shot forward ahead of his body. It was his body that refused to move, stunned by shock, while his mind was laughing, telling him that this was the most natural, the most to have been expected event in the world. Francisco smiled, a smile of greeting to a childhood friend on a summer morning, as if nothing else had ever been possible between them, and Reardon found himself smiling in answer, some part of him feeling an incredulous wonder, yet knowing that it was irresistibly right. "You've been torturing yourself for months," said Francisco, approaching him, wondering what words you'd use to ask my forgiveness and whether you had a right to ask it if you ever saw me again. But now you see that it isn't necessary, that there's nothing to ask or to forgive.
Yes, said Reardon,
the word coming as an astonished whisper. But by the time he finished his sentence, he knew that this was the greatest tribute he could offer.
Yes, I know it.
Francisco sat down on the couch beside him and slowly moved his hand over Reardon's forehead. It was like a healing touch that closed the past.
There's only one thing I want to tell you. I want you to hear it from me. You kept your oath. You were my friend.
I knew that you knew it. You knew it from the first. You knew it no matter what you thought of my actions. You slapped me because you could not force yourself to doubt it.
That,
whispered Reardon, staring at him.
That was the thing I had no right to tell you. No right to claim as my excuse.
Didn't you suppose I'd understand it?
I wanted to find you. I had no right to look for you. And all that time you were...
He pointed at Francisco's clothes. Then his hand dropped helplessly and he closed his eyes.
I was your furnace foreman, said Francisco, grinning.
I didn't think you'd mind that. You offered me the job yourself.
You've been here as my bodyguard for 2 months?
Yes.
You've been here ever since.
He stopped. That's right. On the morning of the day when you were reading my farewell message over the roofs of New York, I was reporting here for my first shift as your furnace foreman.
Tell me, said Reardon slowly. That night, at James Taggart's wedding, when you said that you were after your greatest conquest. You meant me, didn't you?
Of course. Francisco drew himself up a little, as if for a solemn task, his face earnest, the smile remaining only in his eyes. I have a great deal to tell you, he said. But first, will you repeat a word you once offered me, and I had to reject because I knew that I was not free to accept it. Reardon smiled.
What word, Francisco?
Francisco inclined his head in acceptance and answered,
Thank you, Hank.
Then he raised his head.
Now, I'll tell you the things I'd come to say but did not finish that night when I came here for the first time.
I think you're ready to hear it.
I am.
The glare of steel being poured from a furnace shot to the sky beyond the window. A red glow went sweeping slowly over the walls of the office, over the empty desk, over Reardon's face, as if in salute and farewell.